First, new reporting by a team of journalists takes a close look at both the late 80s crack cocaine problem and the more recent concerns with heroin and prescription opioids. They found that the approach to solving both problems varied in many ways and often depended if you were black or white. In many cases, we refer to heroin or opioid-addicted individuals as victims or people with a disease in need of treatment. In the 80s, individuals using crack cocaine were handled with mass arrest and severe sentences. Our next guests were part of the team reporting this new series called Crack versus Heroin that's available on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel website. Andrew Goudsworth is a breaking news reporter for the Asbury Park Press, covering primarily crime and police in Monmouth and Ocean County, New Jersey. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And Austin Bogues is a reporter at the Asbury Park Press. Austin, thanks for being with us as well.
Thanks for having us on, Rob.
Austin, we're living through the opioid epidemic, some people call it now, but take us back to the 80s for people who don't remember or who weren't there at the time. Talk about the crack cocaine problem and how we talked about it.
The crack epidemic, it was really is one of the darker portions of American history. It really flooded urban markets. It became kind of this panic in effect. In terms of there was a lot of fear about some of the crime that proliferated as a result of the crack epidemic. There was a lot of fear in communities. Some of the violence level rose as well. And it really led to the creation of a lot of open-air drug markets and some of the urban epicenters associated with it. What followed, and as our investigation showed, was a very heavy-handed law enforcement response. And, you know, there was a disproportionate amount of black people that were arrested. But it's a very complex story when you look at kind of the origins of the policies behind that. The Congressional Black Caucus were, you know, some of the leading champions of the Lock 'em Up First approach. And really, this thing kind of burned out within a number of years. And you saw even early on that a number of people on the policy level and, you know, in the law enforcement perspective, they realized very quickly that, you know, this wasn't something that they could arrest their way out of. One of the gentlemen that we interviewed, he was a special DEA agent in charge of New York City during the height of the crack epidemic. His name is Robert Stutman. And he testified before Congress saying, like, look, this is not an effective strategy. And, you know, pushing for more of a treatment-first approach. But by this time, there was a big nationwide problem with violence in general that stems back to the 80s. And politically speaking, being looked at as being soft on crime, it just was not popular at all politically. And, you know, there's a big kind of impetus, and this is from both sides of the aisle, from Democrats, from Republicans, from blacks, from whites, to kind of be looked at as being tough on crime. You know, it's one of those things where, with some hindsight, a lot of the predictions that we expected during the height of the crack epidemic, you know, there was worries about super predators and kind of a generation of lost young black men. It never really came to fruition the way that society feared. And what we have left over is kind of a lot of the people who were addicted to crack during the height of the epidemic. A lot of them, if they live, they've made it clean. You know, they've reformed their lives, but they're left with kind of the wreckage of the criminal history that they have.
And Andrew, there's a lot of data in your series here. Can you give us a sense of how those laws that were passed that Austin was just talking about played out when it came to the proportion of people incarcerated, arrested by race versus who was actually using the substances that the laws addressed?
Absolutely. So, I mean, if you look at federal drug surveys, African Americans are slightly higher than whites at reporting crack use over their lives. But if you look at by the population, because the black population of the country is a lot smaller, there actually are more white people using crack cocaine as there were then and there are now compared to African Americans. But if you look at the way, you know, police and prosecutors and the criminal justice system treated this problem, it was treated, you know, it became a black problem. I mean, if you look at the start of the 80s, you know, the number of drug arrests were relatively small. I mean, there were about 500,000 nationwide. By the end of the decade, as these laws started getting put into effect, you had more than 1 million drug arrests, and you had the disparities were starting to really, you know, separate between blacks and whites. I mean, you had years in the 80s and 90s, and really continuing for decades thereafter, where, you know, in areas in states like Wisconsin, where blacks represent about 6% of the population, where they were the majority of cocaine arrests. And that just shows you, you know, where the police and the prosecutors were targeting this problem. And it was primarily, you know, in the inner cities, even well after, you know, the crack cocaine crisis was solved for the most part, and it became less of a talking point.
Austin, you mentioned one person at the center of this. This is a common theme in your series, people who in many cases crafted these policies, these tough on crime policies, repenting, telling you and others that we got this wrong and we're not wild about the outcomes.
Yes, that's something that we ran into time and time again. You know, from people at the top levels of policymaking to even your more run-of-the-mill kind of street cops. You know, one of our colleagues, he interviewed Eric Sterling, who was actually a counsel to the House of Democrats, and he was a leading voice in helping craft some of the disparities between the crack cocaine and cocaine and powder cocaine. And you know, he's calls it one of the biggest mistakes of his professional career, and he's now he's ahead of a he's founded a two criminal justice reform groups, and he's been a leading champion in terms of saying like some of the disparities in the way that the drug laws are applied, they need to be reformed.
Talking to Austin Bogues and Andrew Goudsword from the Asbury Park Press, they were part of a big series comparing the way crack cocaine was handled in the 1980s in the United States and the opioid problems are being handled today. We took a whirlwind tour there, Andrew, of crack cocaine in the 80s. Let's move things up now. What do we see different in our approach to heroin and opioids when it comes to our priorities, like including what we're spending money on to deal with these problems?
Yeah, it's been drastically different. I mean, the focus in Congress and in state legislatures during crack, as we mentioned, was all about more money for prisons, more money for policing. And now the emphasis is, you know, the money's for treatment. The money is for, you know, programs that help people rebuild their lives after an addiction. And, you know, and our reporting found, you know, especially among experts, that this is really the right way to treat drug addiction now. But it just wasn't the case back then. You know, they had an undeniable factor in all this, of course, is, you know, the race of, you know, people who are addicted. I mean, you had in the opioid crisis, particularly at the beginning, you had the addiction problem really centered in rural and suburban places, in large part because doctors didn't necessarily trust African-Americans as much to prescribe opioids because they thought they were, you know, at greater risk of addiction. So a lot of the pills, you know, and opioids that set off this crisis that we're in now started in places that were more rural and suburban. And as the crisis has gone along, you know, you've seen politicians now say that openly that, you know, we're not going to be able to arrest our way out of this problem. We have to treat it as a public health issue. And that, you know, has been to the benefit of society as a whole. But, it, you know, it's hard for people that we talk to who are on the front lines of crack to see, you know, this new approach that emphasizes treatment and compassion and not, you know, wonder, you know, why that wasn't the case for them and why they're still stuck in this pattern where a lot of them can't get good jobs, can't find decent housing because of these convictions that were taken, you know, that happened in another era decades ago.
Austin, I've heard people make the stark accusation that crack cocaine was seen as a black person problem and it was dealt with because of that as a law enforcement problem. Opioids are seen as a white person problem and it's being seen as a treatment problem. Is that maybe oversimplifying, but are people making the case that's part of what happened here?
It's really an oversimplification of the issue. Clearly, though, I mean, if you look at the numbers, you know, there's kind of proof in the pudding when you look at this is really a thing where, you know, even today, there's more black people that are being arrested for cocaine offenses than opioids, even as we look at, you know, just how deadly the opioid epidemic has been in parts of the country. There's still kind of this lock 'em up first approach that's used. However, though, there's some differences in kind of both how both epidemics kind of started off, and you can really see that in kind of in terms of crack. There was a great level of violence associated, of course. You know, there was with the opioid crisis. The death count has really come more from overdoses and from people who are switched over from you know, prescription pills to heroin or fentanyl and those types of things. But you know, there also hasn't been the same stigma applied to opioid. You know, it's not something that with opioids, it's not something that we joke about in society, or, you know, we don't view it as a moral failing. A lot of that is kind of, you know, improvements in the medical community, and also politicians realizing kind of the root causes of addiction. But, you know, there's still kind of this legacy of people looking at crack addicts like, you know, somehow they were less than, or, you know, they were just moral degenerates who or they were lazy, or, you know, it was some sort of choice, whereas now we view addiction today more as a disease.
We'll leave it there for now. Austin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Andrew, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks very much for having us.
That's Andrew Goudsward and Austin Bogues, reporters for the Asbury Park Press. They were part of a big series, part of a team, a project called Crack versus Heroin. A lot more to read there, including individual stories of people who went through addiction in the 1980s and today. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's website, jsonline.com, has that series.